What you were mentioning there about commitment,
yeah.
The word believeth has that kind of thing in there. You are committed. I mean, it's a belief that you act upon. If we could put it this way, it has the same kind of intensity that you might ascribe to, but not the fanaticism or the hatred that you would ascribe to a kamikaze pilot. All right? You believe. You are committed. Yes. And that's what kind of belief we need. Belief. We're talking about here, and commitment is something that each person has to do between God and him or herself, period. Because the old saying is, if someone can talk you into it, like at a rally or a group or an emotional thing, or you're cornered in a prayer meeting and everybody's praying, and oh, Lord, you know, and yes, and you recognize you're a sinner and tears are streaming down, yes, I accept Jesus, and you were talked into it, the old saying is you can be talked out of it. Sure you can. Sure you can. That's correct. Because you know, I don't know of any Christian who is a real true Christian does not have circumstances come in his or her life to really put that to a test whether you really believe. See? And you go back and look at that little section again I did on the courage of the disciples. They had that, we're committed on a sales type of thing, Lord. See, before they were converted, and we'll do it. We'll go to the death. We'll go to Jerusalem. We'll be stoned. I'll never deny you. Baloney. You know, that's so much spiritual baloney, it won't work. It's got to have this belief. And it is literally a part of your very being. It's not just an idea in your head. It's not something that you use when you're in trouble. It is a part of your very being that whether in good times or bad times, whether rich or whether poor, or whether you're whatever the things are, that's how you live and believe. See? You operate that way. Okay, let's just go back to John 6 just for a second here. John 6, because this is true. Absolutely true. And we covered this when we had this section of it. Verse 44. You see, if you are coerced into becoming a Christian because of an emotional thing or because of an altar call or you commit publicly, you know, all this sort of thing. Remember verse 44. No one. No one. Now this is the authority of God speaking. No one. All right? Can come to me except the Father which has sent me draw him. There it is. God has got to do it. And if God is the one who is doing it, then there can't be any layer of human beings between you and God in that relationship. Be teachers, be ministers, be helpers, be other brethren and things like this, but not between you and God. See? Otherwise, they're just kidding themselves. That's why you can't do as a lot of these evangelists say, well, come and give your heart to the Lord, and then we'll give you the list of the churches, and you pick one that's close to you, which one you would like. You're not coming to God. You're coming to a person, and you're going to a church, and you're playing religion. And sooner or later, it's going to fall apart. How many saw this on television called The Rebirth of America? Okay, there was a special one-hour program put out by, I forget the name of the foundation, but it's connected with Pat Robertson. Okay? Rebirth America. Went through it. It was really very well done. Pointed out all the pornography and all of the adultery and all of the drugs and all of the things in government and the judges and you know, and then it got to a commitment to Christ. Okay? They had a follow-up in the Reader's Digest. How many of you get the Reader's Digest? Okay, you look, there's a special section in there that's put out by the same foundation, and they have in there how to repent and how to accept Christ into your life, and very, very deceiving, very dangerous. This is exactly what we're talking about, this hype thing of getting on the bandwagon, see? Okay? And do you accept Jesus? Well, fill out this coupon and check this box and mail it to us. You've accepted Jesus. No way. Verse 44 says, no way, folks. It won't happen. There are going to be a lot of sincere people who think it's going to be that easy. And when the crunch comes, they're not going to make it. They're just not going to make it. But you see how people are deceived? Then comes the kicker. Now, be active in the elections to get out and vote on this issue and this issue and this issue and this issue. So religion is only an ideological mask. It has nothing to do with true salvation. See, they put this book out, The Rebirth of America, and it showed, you know, some things about the founding fathers and how the nation, you know, originally started out believing in God. It all sounded good, you know, just like a lot of the things, Israel and prophecy, and oh, yes, we need to get back to God. And by the way, go vote for this one and that one and the other one. You know, that salvation in the flesh for this world has nothing to do with salvation for eternity through Christ. Okay. Yes. Let's go back to John 13 now. Hope we can get through John 13 today. I think we can. John 13. I'll just review verse 17 again. If you know these things, happy are you if you do them. And I would say that is not just only exclusive of the Passover. I would have to say that would be all the words of God. What did he say there in Matthew, the 7th chapter, about the wise man, the foolish man, the wise man who heard these words of mine and built his house upon a rock? Okay, has to do with all the words, okay? Not just those. Now, verse 18. I speak not of all of you, for I know whom I have chosen, that the scriptures may be fulfilled. Can you imagine how Christ felt all during his ministry, knowing? You know, that I'll have to bring that as a sermon sometime. Just go through and showing all the times where there were the encounters of Jesus and the disciples with Satan. He was around. Remember after his temptation, it said that Satan left him for what? A little season. That's correct. Who actually, I mean, we need to focus in on this. Who actually betrayed Jesus and had him crucified? Satan the devil. Why did that have to be? Why? I'll answer that in the sermon I'll bring on the first Holy Day. Why did that have to be? Very important why it had to be. Okay. But imagine how Jesus felt knowing that here's Judas Iscariot. Did he know the thoughts of other people? Sure. Sure, he'd be sitting there at dinner with the Pharisees and he could read their minds. And he knew what Simon the Pharisee who brought him to this dinner, you know, and a nice dinner. And the old master, you know, come and take the best place here. And then in comes this woman of the street. Started crying, repenting, and washing his feet. And Simon's thinking within himself, if he were a prophet, he'd know what sort of manner that a woman that she was. And Jesus, knowing his thoughts, remember where it said that? Said, Simon, I have somewhat to say to you. Then he gave him the parable about the one who owed a lot, the one who owed the least, and forgave both. And even Simon got that right. And then he really read him the riot act, and he made him worse than the street woman there washing his feet. I would say whenever Jesus needed to understand someone's thought, he had the power. But that doesn't mean that he went around and wherever he walked, he could read everybody's mind, everything that's going on. Now continuing. He that eats bread with me has lifted up his heel, against me. But just imagine how he felt knowing that here's Judas Iscariot, and he knew when he chose him what he was going to do. And remember, Jesus did cry out to the Father, if you be willing, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but your will be done. Okay. And now I tell you before it come, that when it is come to pass, that you may believe that I am he. Verily, verily, I say to you, he that receives whomsoever I send, receives me. And he that receives me receives him that sent me. So therefore, you have to make sure that whoever is preaching is someone that God has really sent. Because there are a lot of people out there crucifying to do a good work for the Lord, which is a good, courageous work, but maybe God didn't send them. Verse 21. And when Jesus had thus said, he was troubled in spirit. And here the Greek means he was just, you know, Have you ever had a situation where all of a sudden you just become really depressed mentally, just like something just came down on you? And that's generally when you have a very traumatic circumstance going on. And he did. Right? He was troubled in spirit and testified and said, "Verily, verily, I say to you that one of you, unto you, that one of you shall betray me." Then the disciples looked on one another, doubting of whom he spoke. You know, that was something here, these disciples, you know, they didn't know very much at this time. They couldn't even suspect that it was Judas. All right, here clear down to the last Passover. And there was one leaning on Jesus' chest, one of his disciples whom Jesus loved. Now John is referring to himself. Now if you understand what was going on, when they ate, they were actually reclining. They were on a lounge reclining. And I'm sure that Jesus was on one lounge and John reached back with his head and, you know, leaned back when he said, "Who is it, Lord?" I'm sure he wasn't lying there like a little kitten, you know, like some people would imagine it. Okay. Simon Peter therefore beckoned to him that he should ask who it should be of whom he spoke. He had a little sign language, you know, "John, you're right there, ask him." Psst, 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 you know. And then lying on Jesus' chest, he said to him, "Lord, who is it?" And Jesus answered, "He it is to whom I shall give a sop." I had one person tell me this proves that the bread that they were eating was leavened bread because it was a sop. How can you have a sop with unleavened bread? All you have to do is just watch a Mexican eat any time. And he takes his tortilla, which is unleavened, uses it as a scoop, and eats, right? Simple. This is not, as we think, a sop to take some French bread and dip it in the gravy, you know? That's what we think of. What they had, and that kind of bread was very common, just like tortillas are for the Mexicans. You just take and roll it up, and you scoop a little bit in there, and you eat it. And when I have dipped, yes, whom I give a sop when I've dipped it. And when he had dipped the sop, he gave it to Judas Iscariot, the son of Simon. And after the sop, Satan entered into him. And here becomes a real spiritual battle from then on. Okay? Oh, well, yeah, there was a spiritual battle going on all the time up until then, but here it got down to cases now. So this shows several things about Satan. Number one, he can put thoughts into the hearts and minds of people and prepare them for what? Later possession. And I think just looking down in the course of modern history, I would have to think that Hitler fulfilled that more than anybody else we could think of. That he put a lot of things into his heart over a long period of time and then toward the end just possessed him unto destruction. Because there was no reason for a lot of the things that Hitler did. When you see the things in get the history of the last part of his life. Okay, so here we have right here. And of course, we're going to see that happen again, aren't we? Right at the end. We're going to see that happen again. Revelation 16. Then said Jesus unto him, "That which you do, do quickly." Now no man at the table knew for what intent he spoke unto him. For some of them thought, because Judas had the bag, that Jesus said to him, "Buy those things that you have need of against the feast," or that he should give something to the poor, which was a common thing to do. They'd go around, find someone who wasn't able to keep the Passover, invite him in, have him keep the Passover with him, give him some food, whatever. And then having received the sop, immediately went out, and it was night. Now you see how all of this is worked at night. Who is the Lord of night? Satan is. The Lord of darkness. I think it's very significant that when we get down to the time of the arrest of Jesus, which we'll see when we get to chapter 18, that it was probably about midnight on the Passover that he was arrested. That coincides exactly with the time that the death angel passed over the houses of the children of Israel when they had the first Passover back in the land of Egypt before they came out of slavery. So God did not pass over his firstborn son on midnight of the Passover, but allowed the death angel to take him or arrest him. Verse 31, therefore, when he was gone out, Jesus said, now is the Son of Man glorified, and God is glorified in him. Now, how is it that God can be glorified in such a gory event? I just want to, you know, because it was gory. It was messy. After the Passover, and he went out, and when he got done praying, everything from then on was just nothing but a mad mess. How could God be glorified in that? All right, again, I will answer that a little later. And if God be glorified in him, God shall also glorify him in himself and straightway glorify him. Little children, yet a little while I am with you, and you shall seek me. And as I said to the Jews, where I go, you cannot come. So now I say to you. Very simple statement, but let's ask the question, where is it that Jesus was going to go? He was going to go to heaven. Why is it that people believe they go to heaven when Jesus said, where I go, you cannot come? I mean, sometimes you get down to these very simple statements and very simple questions, and it cuts a swath right across what a lot of people believe. You cannot go. Why? Because it's impossible for a human being in the flesh to go to heaven. All right. Now, verse 34, here begins the new commandment. Notice Satan was removed from their midst when he gave this commandment. And a new commandment I give unto you. And here's the whole heart and core of the real struggle of what Christians and Christian groups need to attain. You know, that's why whenever there's some great hassle, best thing to do is just get away from it. Just walk away and leave it alone. Because that's the opposite of what happens here. But, you know, when those things occur, how righteous do people get? Huh? I mean, you compare the Inquisitions to what it says here. And then compare it with what Jesus said. You've heard it in past time. That you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. I say to you, love your enemy. Now, how can they justify an Inquisition in killing of millions of people? In the name of Christ. To purify their soul. So that if they purify their soul through the torture and death, that, you know, doesn't make any sense. So with the real situation with any Church of God, this is what we need to strive for. Right here. This is the heart and core of it. You can have a lot of doctrines. You can have the right day. You can have a lot of things right. But what if you have not love? We'll read that in a minute, 1 Corinthians 13. You're nothing. Doesn't count, folks. All your knowledge, all your doctrine, all your, it doesn't count. Okay, gets right down to here. That you love one another as I have loved you, that you also love one another. Now that is a command. And I know what I'm going to do the next time anything like that ever comes up. I'm going to stand up and I'm going to shout that so loud. Say, hey, folks, is this what we're doing here? Huh? All right. By this shall all men know, now that means all, that's not to exclude women, that you are my disciples if you have love one to another. So here he brought that all down to this one focus. Now let's go to 1 Corinthians 13. If you don't have that love, if you don't really have, and what is that love going to do? That love for God and for each other. And how can we love each other unless we love God first? How can we love each other as Christ loved the disciples unless we love God first? You can't do it. 1 Corinthians 13. Let's just go through the whole chapter so we can really emphasize that whole chapter in relationship to what Jesus just commanded. And isn't it interesting that he gave that command on the Passover evening? Okay? So love each other that way. 1 Corinthians 13. Though I speak with the tongues of men and angels and have not charity, but that means love. The Greek word there is agape. And have not love, I'm become as a sounding brass and a tinkling cymbal. And you know, you can pick up on all those things that when someone is dissimulating, you can pick it up, can't you? When something is hollow and doesn't ring true, you can pick it up. Sure you can. And though I have the gift of prophecy, and isn't everyone all excited about prophecy? Man, I have never seen such a thing. Boy, almost everything I read of a church of God has got some kind of prophecy thing in it, and I just sit back and watch it, and I've done it. I'm interested in prophecy, and I've done it, and I've said outlandish things, you know. This prophecy is going to happen, or believe that. What if you understood all the prophecies there were? What if you could lay them all out, have all kinds of charts and graphs, and make it exactly fit and be perfect? And understand all mysteries. I mean, you just an absolute brain, better than the best computer combination of everything in the world, okay? And all knowledge. And though I have all faith so that I could remove mountains and have not love, I'm nothing. Now, that really takes away a lot of things, doesn't it, huh? Sure does. I mean, the gift of prophecy. Hey, you could really get a following with that, right? Understand all mysteries. Man, you could get another following. And all knowledge. And all faith. Have big faith healing campaigns, you know. All right. So that I could remove mountains and have not love, I am nothing. In other words, it doesn't count. What good are those things without love? All right. Though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and I give my body to be burned. Now, the first time I ever saw a burning body was with the Vietnam War. You know, they had these Buddhist monks over there resisting the war, and they'd go over and they'd sit down and they would cross their legs and they would sit in their position, douse themselves with gasoline, and stoically light themselves and burn. They did it for God, right? No. They didn't do it for God. Okay? And give your body to be burned and have not love, it profits nothing. You know what the resurrection Christ is going to say? You know, what you did really didn't amount to anything. Love suffers long and is kind. Now here's the way to eliminate the hassles in the church and in our lives and in our families and everything. Love suffers long and is kind. Now, on the other hand, do not let the kindness be taken advantage of, to where the kindness becomes foolishness, especially in relationship to correcting children. I mean, you can be kind to crooks all day long, right? You're not going to change them. Okay? This is talking about within our relationship in loving each other and getting along with each other. Sure, you can be kind to people in the world. You can even be kind to criminals. But if you're over-kind to them, like the penal system has been, then they, you know, take advantage of you. That's balanced out with the scripture, which says there in Ecclesiastes, the 8th chapter, that because sentence is not carried out against an evil work, the hearts of the son of men are set in them to do evil. See? Okay. Love envies not. Love vaunts not itself, is not puffed up. I saw Jimmy Swaggart the other night there. And I thought, that one right there, not puffed up. No, it wasn't Jimmy Swaggart, no. It was, what was this? It was Sunday morning, and they were starting a new rock network. And there was A.A. Allen, and not A.A. Allen, but Oral Roberts, and his son Robert, and this woman preacher, and this other preacher, and this guy was up there, and he was preaching away, and you could just see I'm doing good. Boy, I'm strutting. You could almost see him just up there. And I thought, you know, Puff's not himself up, you know. And I thought, oh, ghastly. There we go. How great I am. Did Jesus puff himself up? Think about the Passover and the foot washing in relationship to Jesus' behavior during the crucifixion, right? He didn't say, don't you know who I am? No. Did he wash the disciples' feet? Yes. Did he answer back a word? No. Did he willingly go like a lamb to slaughter? Yes. What did he do when he was up on the cross? He said, God, just wait till these angels come down here and we'll get these guys. No, he said, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. Now, is that kind? Long-suffering? Yes, indeed. Does not behave itself unseemly? Seeks not his own? You can just take this as an outline and you can see everything that Jesus did fit right in there, right? Okay. And what does it say of God? God is love, correct? Love is this, that's what God is. Thinks no evil, rejoices not in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth, bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things. That's a real positive and dynamic thing, isn't it? Sure it is. Okay. Love never fails, but whether there be prophecies, I'll just insert right here, this has to do with prophecies of men. It's mentioned in chapter 13, not the prophecies of God, because it says the scripture cannot be broken, so the prophecies of God are not going to fail, I guarantee you that. Whether they be prophecies, they shall fail. Whether there be tongues, they shall cease. Whether there be knowledge, it shall vanish away. For we know in part, and we prophesy in part. But when that which is perfect is come, then that which is in part shall be done away. When I was a child, I spoke as a child. I understood as a child. I thought as a child. But when I became a man, I put away childish things. For now we see through a glass darkly, that is shadowy. We understand certain things. And I know this, and I know this from experiential knowledge, that the more that you understand the grace of God and just literally every day in your prayers, put your life under the grace of God. I mean literally, just in your prayers, place yourself under the grace of God every day. The more that you feel secure and safe and can overcome, and it protects you from Satan. And who is making you righteous then? God, not your own works. For we see through a glass darkly. But then, that is at the resurrection, face to face, that's going to be an exhilarating thing. Remember what John says, it doesn't yet appear what we shall be, but we know. When we're resurrected, just to paraphrase it there, we shall see him as he is, face to face. That's going to be exciting. You talk about a day of excitement and exhilaration and happiness and love. That's going to be something else, isn't it? Face to face. Now I know in part, but then I shall know even as also I am known. Now these three remain. Now abide faith and hope and love. These three. But the greatest of these is love. And so that's why Jesus gave this new commandment back here in John the 13th chapter. And he gave it on the Passover evening. Let's go back and review it again. Let's just make this a keynote of the things that we want to do and grow in this. You know, I've heard a lot of sermons, brethren, we have to overcome. That's true. Brethren, we need to grow. That is true. But how do you do it? You do it through grace, and you do it through love. And the other things come. You know, let's just put it this way. How many people have wanted and are wanting and desiring, and many of them even planning to escape the tribulation through whatever means, that they want to go to a place of safety or be protected, right? And that's the basis of a lot of prophecies, isn't it? To try and figure out when it's going to be. Now, I'll just give you a truism, and I think it is right. If you love God with all your heart and mind and soul and being, and if you love the brethren like it says here, do you think that God is going to send you through it? I don't think so. If he does, then you're going to demonstrate the love that you have for God. But no one is going to go to a place of safety by figuring out where it is, or how to get there, or have a box to take with them, or whatever. There are those who had their Petra box right by their door. That's right. Just in case they got the word to go, they had it right there, you know. But if you love God, and if you love the brethren, will God take care of you? Yes. All right. Where then should the emphasis be? Not to become maudlin, sentimental, and soft-headed, to where then everything is, if you don't have love, you know, and become great mushy-gushies. That's not what I was talking about. A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another as I have loved you, that you also love one another. And by this you'll all know that you are my disciples, if you have love one to another. Now, that's the only way to get rid of hassles. And that's the only way to have things stay together. So with our group here, let's make sure we have the glue of love to hold things together. Because that's what will do it. That's what will do it. And Simon Peter said to him, Lord, where are you going? Verse 36. Now we're changing the subject here again. And Jesus answered him, where I go, you cannot follow me now, but you shall follow me afterwards. And Peter said to him, Lord, why can't I follow you now? I will lay down my life for your sake. And Jesus answered, will you lay down your life for my sake? Verily, verily, I say to you, the cock shall not crow till you've denied me three times. Well, we covered that on the courage of the disciples sometime in the past. Well, that brings us through chapter 13. Good, we made it. That brings us right up to just before the Passover. And I'm going to do chapter 14 and 15 down in Los Angeles, and we'll have those tapes available and also the videotapes, so you won't miss anything at all.